Now, it is hard to think of a city more mythologized than Paris. Zinc-counted cafes, earnest philosophic discussion in a pall of gore smoke, glittering shops, theatres, exquisite buildings. It is a city where the aesthetic and civilized life finds its fullest expression. And of course, it is the core of fashion, of our notion of style. Where did that come from? And is that still the case? We are going to ask Valerie Steele. Valerie is director and chief curator of the museum at New York's Fashion Institute of Technology. She's the author of Paris Fashion, A Cultural History, and joins us via Skype from New York. Valerie, welcome.
Thank you.
What is it about Paris? Why is it a stylish place?
Why Paris? Well, I think it's really a question of, through the centuries, Paris has repeatedly established itself as a center of fashion. Already by the late 17th century, Louis XIV was king of the most fashionable court in Europe, the one that everyone wanted to copy. And Paris was the city with the most luxury artisans. And Parisians were really mad about novelty. For foreigners, it seemed that every week Parisians were coming up with new fashions. So that really sort of established the situation where, for people all around the Western world, Paris was the capital.
And it's a bubble, isn't it? It's an enclave. It's a very special little creation in this little world.
Yes, and there were worlds within worlds. So, you know, the Rue Saint-Honoré was the sort of the center of Paris as the center of fashion. That's where all the fashion dolls were sent out off to Russia and to the United States and to England and Latin America. Everywhere, before fashion magazines, these tiny dressed fashionable dolls, les poupées de la Rue Saint-Honoré, were the fashion guidelines for people everywhere.
Before that time, did Paris have that sense of itself, or was this derived from the monarchy? Was this something which filtered down from people with a very robust opinion of themselves?
Well, before that, you didn't really have one center that was the capital of a nation state in Europe. You had cities like Florence and Venice, and you had courts like the court of Burgundy, but only in the 16th century, when Spain became the most powerful country, did Spanish black fashion spread all around Europe. And then when France became more powerful than Spain, Louis XIV's minister Colbert specifically said that fashion was going to be for France what the gold mines of Peru and Mexico were for Spain. It was going to be a source of money. And this would be the center of not only style, but this would be financially incredibly lucrative for France to have everyone running to buy French fashion.
Did it work out that way?
It did. The problem was, in menswear, the English broke away, and by the end of the 18th century, London had become the capital of men's fashion. But Paris continued to be the capital of women's fashion through Napoleon, through revolutions, and then with the development of the haute couture in the middle of the 19th century, that really established Paris as the capital now for women's fashion.
I want to take you back to that moment, the revolution. I mean, it's surely a disruption to this growing sense of style and fineness.
Indeed, a disruption to luxury. High heels disappeared and court dresses disappeared. There were a few things that emerged as the fashions of the future, such as trousers for men instead of knee breeches. But on the whole, the revolution was a break. And it was only when Napoleon had himself crowned emperor, or rather crowned himself emperor, that a new court and a new luxury fashion system developed again.
I, for one, am grateful for the demise of the knee breeches, but and of course, it becomes something broader, doesn't it? I mean, Paris has this broad sense of its elegance and its style, and it goes way beyond fashion into gardens, into food, into buildings.
Exactly. It's all about the art of living. And it has to do not only with the fashion industry and producing dresses, but also with producing a climate of knowledgeable performers and spectators who would go to the opera looking marvelous and go out to dinner looking marvelous. Mm. And it was all part of a worldview that attracted people from all around the world.
And it depends on that, doesn't it? I mean, the fashionable sense of Paris depends on the people of that place incorporating that into their lives, into projecting a sense of their personal style.
And, of course, visitors as well, because it was always said from the beginning that, you know, only the Parisienne knows fashion. But then it was equally said that any woman who came to Paris could make herself into a Parisienne.
Valerie Steele has written the book Paris Fashion, A Cultural History. Valerie, I mean, these days, in this time of global enterprise, of, well, fashion is a very broad spread notion. Is Paris, does it still cling to that idea of being an epicenter?
Well, obviously fashion is now a global system, and there are dozens, if not hundreds, of fashion weeks around the world, everywhere from Moscow to Melbourne and Sao Paulo to Shanghai. Mm. But of the four big fashion capitals, Paris, New York, Milan, and London, which attract the most buyers and the most journalists, it's still generally conceded that Paris is first among equals. And in addition, the largest number of the big fashion and luxury companies are based in Paris. So the Louis Vuittons, the Chanels, etc., are based there. And everyone comes there for the Paris Fashion Week.
That's interesting, because the brands you mentioned are very much global entities, but draw so much of their cachet from that French origin.
And it, as you say, there's a real element of myth to it, because the haute couture was founded by an Englishman, Charles Frederick Worth, who came to Paris. And nowadays there's a German, Karl Lagerfeld, there's an Italian, Anthony
yes.
Vaccarello. There are tons of English people, tons of Americans in Paris as designers. But the mystique that it's only in Paris that they can have a real world platform has a very strong element of truth to it.
20th century, an incredibly important time for the growth of that presence and that industry in Paris.
And one of rocky ups and downs, of course, most notoriously down during the 4 years of the Nazi occupation of Paris, when pretty much all of the Allied countries were completely cut off from Paris fashion and had to come up with their own fashions, you know, in Britain and America and Australia. And after the war, the French government and the French fashion industry had to make a concerted effort to regain its position, aided, of course, by the fact that there were so many foreign women who were longing to have some of that Paris magic back again. But it took a couple of years. It took till January 1947 when Christian Dior launched the new look. If you look at the clothes from 45, 46, they're not very exciting.
But that's interesting. I mean, you mentioned Dior there, and so much a part of that recovery from austerity, and Dior symbolized that in, hello, we've got fabric, we've got elegance, we're out of the coldness of the Second World War.
Exactly. As Dior himself said, we were in a time of women boxers and women warriors, broad shoulders, and we brought in women who were like flowers, who were all hourglass shapes and padded.
Is the fact that Paris as a political entity takes this so seriously, is that fundamental to the success of Paris's enduring claim to be a fashion heartland? I mean, it
certainly doesn't hurt. Mm. I mean, we see that so many creative designers come out of London, and yet they immediately flee to Paris as soon as they get successful enough, because the British government is not really supporting it. The Italians do try, but Paris still seems to be attracting the most creative people. I mean, there was a big kind of revolution in the 80s when Japanese avant-garde designers appeared, but the best ones all started showing in Paris and undercut the idea of Tokyo as a fifth fashion capital. If all the best Japanese talent went to Paris to show, it reinforced Paris.
I mean, you point this out in the book. I mean, Paris fashion is often seen as a frivolity, but this this is a serious enterprise. This has very definite economic impact, far broader than the actual industry itself.
Yes, and I think a lot of people in Anglo-Saxon countries, as the French put it, continue to think of fashion as being frivolous, and the French really concentrate on look for the money. The money is there. This is a really enormous business.
It's going to endure, do you think, Valerie? Eternally?
Well, I don't know if eternally, but people always ask me, do I think Shanghai or some other place is going to become the next fashion capital? I mean, Shanghai was always known as the Paris of the East, but I think it's much more likely that the best Chinese designers will again show in Paris. If there's going to be a new fashion capital, it's more likely to be online if people suddenly decide it's too much trouble to go traipsing around the world for a month, at least two times, if not four times a year, to see the collections.
Yes, www.paris.fr. That'll be the, place.
Exactly.
Valerie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Valerie Steele, she's a director, chief curator of the museum at New York's Fashion Institute of Technology, and she is the author of Paris Fashion, A Cultural History, and this is Blueprint here on RN.